Welcome to Keeping Your Together in a Stressed World with Michelle Post and Scott Grossberg. Each week, we explore down and dirty ways to stop awfulizing, catastrophizing, going down the rabbit hole, and moving through all the craziness that is happening right now. We're here to create a community of like-minded people as we give you tips, tricks, and techniques for keeping sane in an unhinged world. And now, here are your hosts, Michelle Post and Scott Grossberg.
Hey, everybody. This is Scott Grossberg, one of your co-hosts for the podcast, Keeping Your Shit Together in a Stressed World. Oh, boy. Oh, boy. And I'm here with my co-host, Michelle Post. Hello, Michelle.
Hi, Scott. Hi, everybody. Thanks for tuning in, especially our new listeners and our faithful followers. So I guess that's everybody.
Yeah, so we're at almost 9,600 all-time plays now.
Whatever and with that.
So I want to thank everybody, as I'm sure, Michelle, you do too, everybody for listening and liking and sharing and subscribing on your podcast platform. Please, we encourage you to do so. We've thanked, as Michelle just did, all of our listeners from different areas. And again, Taiwan, you are coming right in there along with Canada.
I love Taiwan.
I've not been there. I've heard marvelous, wonderful things.
Yeah. I had an amazing experience there in connection with the think tank that's called the International Work Group on Death, Dying, and Bereavement. IWG. Anyway, they had a meeting in Taiwan several years ago and invited me to join. And it was an amazing experience.
Wonderful. Mm-hmm. I do want to let everybody know with the disclaimer that your results may vary. I did just get the recent booster for whatever the new COVID variant Bivalent is, based on the recommendation of my physician. I did check with him first, and it kicked my butt for about 30 hours. Uh-huh. And then went away. I mean, so something happened, which people are telling me the reaction means it's working. I know there are some of you out there who will say the next time we have the big national alert, my arm will start glowing blue with letters on it. But whatever, I did have it. I just wanted to let everybody know that particularly the elderly and the infirm, please make sure if you do get these, you might want to consider having someone with you, at least for the day following the shot, so that mm-hmm. you're not alone if you have an adverse reaction.
Mm-hmm. Also, you know, check with your doctor if you have recently had COVID. Check with your doctor about the amount of time that you need to wait before getting a booster shot if you've recently had COVID, because there are some counterindications to having it too closely to a past exposure to COVID.
That and one more little piece of COVID news I was unaware. I was unaware until I was actually notified by my insurance carrier. The Postal Service has reinvigorated. They've restarted the you have free home testing kits.
Good.
So I think you get four of them per household. But that's here in the United States. I don't know what they're doing overseas, but for those of you in the U.S., you might want to check. And when I had ordered mine, it came in a little package with a little note on top of it that said that the expiration date on your prior kits has been extended. Now, I'm not sure what that means, frankly.
Right.
Because it's like an expiration date's an expiration date.
Right.
They've extended it. That said, little tongue-in-cheek fun for the morning. Many of you know I've been performing at the Magic Castle here in Hollywood, and it's coming up again. Well, as performers, they give us, among other things, bottled water backstage so that we have water. I noticed that my water bottles have expiration dates on them, and I'm trying to figure that out.
Like water expires?
I haven't figured it out yet.
It's probably the container that water is in.
That's what my wife thinks. I mean, uh-huh. And by the way, it's decades from now, the expiration date.
Okay.
But it's like, I didn't think water expired.
No, it doesn't.
However, I'm checking to see. I got it when I go back on Friday this week. I need to check to see if maybe there's some, like, this is some secret little code on there that you can use for a magic trick. I really don't know.
Uh-huh. Oh,
but
fun.
But my water has expiration dates on it.
Oh, fascinating. I'll have to look next time.
So we have a big show today, and usually yes. we do a lot of back and forth and bring people up to speed. But I think you and I both agree that in light of today's sobering, somber topic, mm-hmm. in light of developments that are impending, even as we do this show, I think maybe we just jump right in. What do you think?
I agree.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, today we're talking about navigating stress in the midst of war. And I mean, let's talk about the elephant in the room. We're talking about the Israeli-Hamas war. Mm-hmm. I want to underscore something, as opposed to how it's been reported in other situations over thousands of years. This is not an a Jewish-Muslim war. This is mm-mm. not an Israeli-Arab war. This is not a Jewish-Arab war. They are literally calling it an Israeli-Hamas war. Mm-hmm. And I think as we go through today, that's an important distinction as we hear about anti-Semitism and anti-Palestinian sentiments that are going around the world. We're attempting to de-escalate a lot of that is what mm-hmm. we're attempting to do. And, you know, when Michelle and I were chatting about, do we do a show on this? Do we not do a show on this? Let's, you know, that's part of the show, that the purpose of this show is to help people obtain tools, different perspectives, and maybe a varied approach or options for how they express their emotions, mm-hmm. understand their emotions, et cetera. We kind of just said, look, this is too important not to talk about. Mm-hmm. And so here we are. I think certainly everybody, I've always loved, I used it all the time when I was practicing law, and I want to emphasize this right now, and I think it comes from Schlesinger. Everybody is entitled to their opinion. They are not entitled to their own facts, though. And I want to separate these out, because as we talk about this very serious subject, and Michelle and I offer different perspectives on it, I happen to have a rabbi's statement that was issued that actually started this whole discussion with Michelle and I.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are opinions everywhere on all of this. I think what will help us, if you don't mind, Michelle, is if we go back to some basic terminology so okay. that the folks listening to this can help understand the quote facts, end quote, that they are hearing on the news. I happen to be very skeptical when I hear things on the news. I don't care which side of the aisle you're on here in the United States, mm-hmm. right? Most of the news, if not all the news today, in my opinion, has a bias slant to it. And mm-hmm. that is because they have to sell advertising.
Yes.
It's a money business.
Yes.
And they sell advertising by getting eyeballs. And they get eyeballs by appealing to a certain segment of their demographics, the ones that will attract their advertisers. Mm-hmm. And they get these eyeballs by reporting certain facts.
Mm-hmm.
Now, let's set aside the misinformation, disinformation, and just false information that happens during war. I think we can all agree that that happens. With that, you know, I went back. I've heard. I make it a point, by the way, when I listen to the news, to listen for catchphrases. Mm-hmm. What is it that the news keeps talking about?
Yeah.
Right. What is the similarity across platforms, whether it's the BBC or the Jerusalem Post or CNN or Fox News? What do they all seem to be saying alike? Mm-hmm. And I don't know if anyone's noticed, everybody is lately talking about the law of war,
mm.
which, and it's like, you've got to, as a listener, unless you're a lawyer, be saying, what the hell is the law of war?
I don't know.
And you know, you you read about the things that Hamas has done. Mm-hmm. You read about what people are afraid Israel will do. Mm-hmm. You read about the show of force that the United States is now putting into play in the Mediterranean and what that means. You hear about the warnings to Hezbollah and Iran. You hear about the warnings all the way around with the plea that that you adhere to the law of war. And so I went out and pulled out literally our Department of Defense's law of war manual. There is one.
There is one. Okay.
And it was updated in July of 2023. And this document, by the way, is the law of war. This is how to conduct a war.
Wow.
Legally. And it's almost 1,200 pages long.
Wow.
And I went through it because I think that we need to all understand it's one thing to read and hear things on the news. It's another thing to understand operationally what a war means and the context. So I, if you don't mind, I'd love to just start with some definitions here so that we're all on common ground. And understand, I was actually pretty surprised. I didn't understand that the law of war went back to the 1800s and literally some of what has become the Hague Convention. But 1899, they've got stuff. The 1909 Declaration of London, 1914 Rules of Land Warfare. And they've got this whole chronology in this manual of everything and anything that takes place. With that said, let me scroll forward here real quick. Again, this is 1,200 pages long, and it covers everything. And the purpose of the law of war, you can call it the rule of war, whatever you want to, but the law of war, the purpose of this manual is to provide information on the law of war to, in this case, Department of Defense personnel responsible for implementing the law of war and executing military operations. And it's a legal document. And they go through and they talk about literally the conducting. It's very vanilla. It's almost like, this is war, this is what happens. And they talk about the conduct of hostilities and the protection of war victims. And they then go through, I want to find how they're defining. And this is what happens when I scroll up to the chronology instead of staying where I was at as far as definitions in here. The law of war relates to the conduct of hostilities and has generally been viewed as a prohibitive law in the sense that it forbids rather than authorizes certain uses of force. And I think that's important to understand here when we're talking, right? So they say, for example, the lawfulness of the use of a type of weapon does not depend on the absence of authorization, but whether or not the weapon is prohibited. So we've heard about in the past, you know, cluster bombs. We've heard about chemical warfare, right? These are prohibited weapons. And then here's what I was looking for. They actually have the object of war defined. Now, bear in mind, Israel has declared war on Hamas. This is a war. This isn't a conflict. This is a war taking place. This is why people talk about the rule of war being implemented. You've heard about the Geneva Convention. Understanding the object and nature of war is important in understanding and applying the law of war. The object of war has been understood to be the submission of the enemy as quickly and efficiently as possible. The military defeat of the enemy in war is intended to advance political objectives. Even where those political objectives are limited, the object of war is nonetheless to ensure the submission of the enemy as quickly and efficiently as possible. That's a big statement.
Ooh.
And the reason that I wanted to bring this up is because they also recognize that the nature of war, and this is where the show comes in, there's violence and suffering. And they say war has been described as a violent clash of interests characterized by the use of force. The fact that violence is an essential element of war has been viewed as an important as important in understanding the nature of war. The violent nature of war has also meant that suffering has been an unfortunate and tragic but unavoidable consequence of war. Okay, this is, and I'm going to end it there because it goes on about all these other things, certainly minimizing for what we're going to call innocent civilians, the suffering. But I wanted everybody at the beginning of the show to understand from an objective legal perspective the parameters under which everybody is supposed to be operating versus a terrorism situation or where they walk, where certain countries or entities or organizations operate outside the rule of war.
Mm. Okay.
You know, I'm not going to sit here and pretend to know all the facts in the Middle East. I don't think I could do that. I don't think, Michelle, you could do that. We're subject. We're subject as well to all of the weaknesses of getting our news just like everybody else.
Mm-hmm. And this what's is classified, what's not classified, what's released to the public, what's not.
And there's stuff that you'll never know. Mm-hmm. With that said, you know, there's a rabbi that I happen to, I very highly respect the man. I don't want to read all of what he had to say because it's not the point of the show is to not replicate him. But it's very interesting after you and I put this show together to get some distraction on what was going on in the world. I turned on one of my favorite shows and I happened to be watching on Amazon Prime Good Omens. I read the book, but yeah. I'm watching the second season of Good Omens by Neil Gaiman. And to what I love, I mean, I just love the way he and Terry Pratchett write, and they're just wonderful folks. And I'm not going to ruin this for everybody, but it is literally the apocalypse, Armageddon, and what happens? What happens when that's on the table?
Mm-hmm.
And at one point, it was so timely for what we're doing here and what I'm about to share with everybody. At one point, the ultimate archangel of good and the ultimate demon of hell are being criticized by their own armies for not choosing sides. And one of them says, I finally found something that's more important than choosing sides.
Yes.
And it was like, how timely for this.
Yeah.
And if you don't mind, what I'd love to do is just share a portion of what Rami Shapiro, he's a rabbi that writes for Spirituality and Health, among others. Do you mind if I just read a portion of this?
Oh, please do. It was very moving when you shared it with me, yeah.
So this is from Rabbi Rami Shapiro, and it's his statement on the Israel-Hamas war.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, I was asked by my friends at Spirituality and Health magazine to share my thoughts on the horrors unfolding in Israel and Gaza. I'm not an expert on any of this. I write as a human, a Jew, a father, and a grandfather. I write from my pain and my anger. And I hope you hear some wisdom in this as well. That's how he starts this.
Mm-hmm.
And I was taken, by the way, after I had originally read this and shared it with you, Michelle, watching some of these new video feeds that are being released from both sides.
Yes.
And it just really underscored this. So here's what Rabbi Rami had to say. I watched a video of an Israeli mother clutching her baby to her chest as she ran for shelter while Hamas bombed her neighborhood in Ashkelon. I watched a video of a Palestinian mother clutching her baby to her chest as she ran for shelter while the IDF bombed her neighborhood in Gaza. If not for the labels on the screen telling me who was who, I could not tell these women and their babies apart. And I'm going to skip through this. But he emphasizes, there are those who insist that because I'm a Jew, I must choose to care for the first rather than the second. There are those who insist that because they are Palestinian or because they count themselves but not Jews among the marginalized, they must choose to care for the second rather than the first. This is a false and wicked choice rooted in what Albert Einstein called a delusion of consciousness that creates a zero-sum world of us against them. And again, I'm going to skip a lot of what he explains in here. And he ends it with, if you want to choose a side, side with the mothers clutching their babies and running for shelter.
Yeah.
If you want to choose a worldview, choose the non-zero world of all of us together. Any other choice perpetrates the trauma and brutality we call human civilization.
Mm-hmm.
And I read things like that, and, you know, I can watch this stuff and hear this stuff and get angry. We've talked before about my anger management issues when it comes to suffering in the world. My first response to 9/11 was I got angry. Others got scared. Others wanted more information. Others froze, right? You know, the whole fight, flight, fright, faint concept. Mm-hmm. We all approach this differently. I'm a big fan of Golda Meir, right? One of the former prime ministers of Israel. And I'm constantly reminded of, you can't negotiate peace with someone who's come to kill you. I'm constantly reminded of, I think it was JFK, one of our presidents, who said, you can't negotiate with someone who says what's mine is mine and what's yours is mine.
Yeah. Yeah.
I get the facts that people want to put out there. And unfortunately, going back to the rule of war, there is collateral damage. Mm-hmm. What I don't like to hear is the term acceptable losses.
Yeah, that's a rough.
Because it's not acceptable.
Mm-hmm.
It may be consequential.
Mm-hmm.
We know it's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Like watching a train wreck, right?
Right.
About to happen. You know, this is not good.
Right.
That doesn't mean it's acceptable. And
right.
I trust that the listeners to this show, irrespective of where you are positionally with what's going on right now, it may spread, it may get bigger. We don't know at this point because we don't have all the facts. To understand that you and I are coming from what's acceptable and what isn't.
Mm-hmm.
And to the extent that we can do no harm while still killing a cancer, right? We've talked about this before. That's my metaphor.
Mm-hmm.
If a doctor comes in, puts up an x-ray and it says, and the doctor says, look, you've got cancer. What do you want me to do about it? You've got all these options. We can wait and we can wait and see. We can do this. We can do that. Mm-hmm. I'm going to tell you what my response is. Kill the fucker. Just take it out. Radiate it. Do whatever you got to do. Take it out. That doesn't work in the terms of humanity. So I don't know where you are. We've talked to, because I want, before we're done here, to talk to folks about how they can help victims of the war.
Yeah, good.
On both
good.
Sides.
Resources. Okay. So I will say that my exposure to what's been happening in the Middle East originally came through a very Judeo-Christian perspective growing up in the Christian church, and then became more in college and in grad school, became more informed about peacemaking. And even in one of my kind of obscure favorite musicians, Michael Franti and Spearhead, who did a documentary about the Middle East back in 2004, released in 2006. And one of his quotes was kind of similar, interestingly, to what the rabbi said, which is, this trip made me realize one very important thing, which is I'm not on the side of Americans, Iraqis, Israelis, or Palestinians. I'm on the side of the peacemakers, whichever country they come from. And part of that came from his work with a group that I believe is still functioning called the Parents Circle Family Forum, which is a grassroots organization of Palestinian and Israeli families who have lost immediate family members due to the conflict and wanting to work on peace between the two peoples around reconciliation and tolerance and peace. So as a matriarch and a matriarchal perspective, if you drill all the way down to the family unit, I'm on the side of the peacemakers, if that makes sense. Like, whether I'm dealing with a country or a company or a state or politicians or a couple or a family, how do we obtain more peace, happiness, and life satisfaction overall, right? So what's fair fighting rules? I just went over, I had a couple sessions yesterday and we reviewed what are fair fighting rules. So while there's the law of war, telling people what seems like fair war, and of course people ignore it, you know, that we see terrorism all over the place where people are ignoring laws of war. And we see it in the family where people ignore fair fighting rules and engage in all kinds of abuse and atrocities within the family. So that said, I then had to shift over the last week to parents of mine that are struggling with their elementary school, middle school, and high school kids where conflict is happening on campuses and how to talk to children about war.
Yeah.
And Scott, you and I found the site from the National Child Trauma Stress Network. They produced kind of a lengthy 3-page document, and my colleague, Lauren Schneider at our house in Los Angeles, actually has a different document that you can get from them that's more bite-sized, particularly if you're a family that's grieving because you can't handle all this information. So if you've actually experienced somebody in these most recent war circumstances who's either kidnapped or has died, their ability to take in a document like this 3-page document is very minimal because they're overloaded with stress. So you need a shorter document, and those are available. But for those of us who are just trying to cope with war in general without the personal struggle of also having a grief brain going on, the Talking to Children About War document from NCTSN is really pretty good because it has references for age-related reactions to trauma, working effectively with military families, understanding child trauma and resilience. But the main thing is start the conversation. So if you're at home and you don't have children, or you have grandchildren, or you have teenagers, or it's just you and your spouse, what are you talking about? What do you know about the situation? How is it affecting your body? What are your media outlets that you're getting information from? Don't presume that you know what the other people in your own home are thinking or feeling. Give them a space to talk about it and to share their worries or their fears about how this is affecting them and those that they know. And feelings are valid, right? They're not always accurate, but they are valid. We can have all kinds of feeling reactions to what's going on, and our feelings are valid. And recognize, like, conversations like this, especially because this document, I think, was created after Ukraine and Russia started war. So it's not, this document isn't just something that happened recently. This is a document that's been created with the help of SAMHSA, Substance Abuse and Mental Health Service Admin, and Health and Human Resources. So we've had more wars and different children are affected in different communities, right? So this is not going to be the first conversation you have at home about war. This isn't going to be the last conversation you have at home about war. So make this a part of creating safe spaces for children and teens or your spouse to talk about their own reactions.
Yeah, I want to, this would be, I think, a good point, good time to point out what I've been also noticing on the news. And it's not just because of the wars. I've noticed this with elections. I've noticed this with any crisis that's going on. The news has a life cycle, just like everything else.
Yep.
And if you've taken the time to take a step back and watch what all of the outlets seem to be doing right now, there's a drama arc to this.
Yes, there is.
And I want you to be aware you're also being manipulated. That's not, that's not to say it's in a mean or improper way. It's designed to get your emotions going and designed to keep you fixated on their news reporting. I have literally had to turn off all of the channels when it gets to some of these videos, right?
Yeah.
If you want to watch this stuff and be aware that this is going to have an impact on you, I'm not watching it. I'm a grown ass adult. I'm not watching it because it's too painful to watch on both sides. I just read about the unfortunate situation of what appears to be a completely unjustified stabbing of a six-year-old Palestinian child here in the U.S. What the fuck,
people,
right? And, you know, I don't know all the news about it other than I think they're now going to prosecute it as a hate crime. Come on. And it's like, if you watch this stuff,
yes,
it's going to trigger emotions in us. So, yes. You know, it's very funny. You were talking about this document. I've been looking at some other things, among others, from Dr. Ashley Kipnis. She's the director of Applied Psychology Services in New Jersey. And she was talking about even preschool kids, right?
Being
exposed to this. And I loved one of the things that she said here. And actually, this was another doctor who said, if the young child comes to you asking questions, that's your opportunity to talk to them.
Yep.
Instead of saying, you're too young.
Nope.
If you say you're too young, that then leads them to feel something's dangerous or scary.
Yeah.
Now, war is dangerous and scary. And yes. That's the other thing I want to point out. You know, I was just listening to an interview with an IDF, that's the Israeli army, an IDF soldier who said, we are getting ready for a suicide mission.
Wow.
And it's like, this is how entrenched people are. They know they're going in for a ground war that they may not be coming back out of. How do you expect a child, let alone someone who's 65 years old,
right,
to react to this?
Well, so also remember that you adults at home, if you have children in ear sight, they are often listening when you are unaware that you're discussing this. So even if you're having a discussion and don't think you're involving them, they can misconstrue what they hear and fill in the blanks with very inaccurate details that increases their distress. Also, we learned from 9/11 that young children watching the news didn't think it was two planes bombing two buildings being shown multiple times. They thought every time they saw it on the news, it was a new plane and a new building. So when news is on and there are children around, they don't know that it's not Kansas City, Missouri that's being bombed. Yeah. They don't understand that it's a different country. They think it's their own space and time. So you need to be careful around increasing their fear and their anxiety just because they're overhearing you and not understanding you, or they're seeing things on TV that they think are actually happening in their own neighborhood because they just don't have that kind of brain development to understand. So very important.
You know, the other thing, and Michelle, it'd be interesting to hear your therapeutic take on this. The Israel-Hamas war is this is not new stuff, folks. The way it's being carried out, the way it initiated, mm-hmm. right? What Israel's calling their 9/11. Mm-hmm. There are such deep-rooted philosophical, religious, spiritual, jurisdictional. God, there's just so much stuff at play here that nobody, neither Michelle or I, are attempting to persuade anybody of anything. What we're doing here is saying there might be better ways to keep your shit together in the middle of war instead of just completely losing it.
Right.
And we know, I know, you're going to get angry. You're going to be sad. You're going to get depressed. You're going to have mood swings. Watch your eating, right? Are you noticing that you're not eating? I've got some family members who are obsessing over this right now.
Right.
And it's because they are saying, I remember what World War II was like.
That's right.
So their
past exposure to trauma gets relived when a new thing that you're maybe not even involved in gets brought up.
Yeah. So again, I was very careful at the beginning to emphasize this is an Israel-Hamas war.
Right.
It is not a religious war.
Right.
And even though there are religious overtones to this, I'm not naive. I get what the root cause of all this is. Because of that, however, I certainly, in my family and friends who remember Nazi Germany, let's just call it what it is, and the anti-Semitism that reared its ugly head then, they are afraid between that and what happened with the pogroms in Russia that it will start happening again.
Exactly.
And I urge everybody to you don't have to be silent. You can be outraged. You can be concerned. You can have a community who supports you. Let's not take it to the edge where it becomes not verifiable by facts.
I, from a practical standpoint, I also want our listeners to hear this and say to themselves, this is a perfect opportunity for you to look over your own personal history lifespan and make a list of the hard things that you faced and you survived, and recognize what you did to get through that time and what you might be able to use now to help you through this time if you're very distressed and stressed about it. So, for example, one of the hard things that I think most of us in the entire world could not have imagined that we would face in our lifetime is a worldwide shutdown pandemic. And what we did to get through that time, some of those things were very healthy skills that you built. So I want to remind you that you got through that time. Even with COVID having a surge, it's still not at the same level as it was before we had treatment options, before we understood it, before we had vaccines. So we are not at the same place we were in 2020. What did you do to get through 2020 and 2021? How can that apply to how you're feeling about war right now, or how you're feeling about political unrest right now? What are the other skills that you've built over time to help you address really stressful times in your life? Remind yourself that you have grit, resilience, and strength, and that you have faced difficult things, and we can do hard things together. And remind yourself of your own tenacity.
Yeah, the other thing, I want to kind of go back to a show we did a long time ago, right? Logical fallacies and the way we talk to ourselves. And one of the things I've also noticed listening, I'm not going to even tell you the sides, but I think it'd be easy to figure out. We talk about innocent civilians, right? None of us want suffering by an innocent civilian. Well, I've been listening to people, and the way they interpret civilian is absolutely fascinating. Because I actually heard someone yesterday say that no civilians have been injured in Israel. Now, think about what that implies. That means that to them, everybody in Israel who was injured, maimed, killed, raped, tortured, taken hostage is an enemy. And so I want you to be very careful the way you're using terms.
Wow.
Right? It's very, very easy to take a term. I was a lawyer for 40 years. Mm-hmm. Very easy to take a term, put your own definition to it. So mm-hmm. this is why I started off with the rule of war, and I invite everybody to go look it up. Again, it's 1,200 freaking pages long. Mm-hmm. And we start putting some definitions to this. War is messy. War is a conflict. People are going to be hurt. There is going to be collateral damage. This isn't a I wish it away kind of situation. Mm-hmm. And so one of the things I'd like to do, Michelle, if you don't mind, because I want to make sure we get to this before we're done, mm-hmm. irrespective of which of if you're taking sides and irrespective of whether you want to say, I'm not going to take sides, I just want to help people. Mm-hmm. Is to let people know that there are resources out there.
Yes, yes.
With the understanding, whenever there's a conflict, right, there's a huge earthquake that takes place, or there's a tsunami that takes place, there are lots of scams out there. So be very careful of yeah. people trying to raise money when it's just for their own pockets.
I know.
That's a whole nother thing.
Do your research.
do your research. But these are some that came from Time Magazine that I was found. If you don't mind, I'd like to share resources. Mm-hmm. Again, these are for, I'm going to give you both sides of the conflict, of the war. Mm-hmm. First of all, the kibbutz that was attacked on October 7th, they're accepting donations directly. So great. you can find kibbutz near Oz and do it that way. Israel's National Emergency Medical Services is on the front lines attempting to help people. They're the ones that bring in ambulances, boats, etc. And it's called Magen David Adom, A-D-O-M, not A-M. Mm. Adom, you just get online and they'll tell you how to do that. There is an agency called IsraAid. I'd never heard of them before. I-S-R-A-A-I-D. This is a humanitarian aid organization that is literally their approach is not only immediate, but long-term humanitarian care. There's the Alliance for Middle East Peace, which is what I think, Michelle, one of the concepts that you were talking about. This is 170 non-governmental agencies bringing together Palestinians and Israelis designed around Palestinian-Israel peace building. And they, too, are assisting in emergency responses, and it's called the Alliance for Middle East Peace. There's Medical Aid for Palestinians, or MAP. They are responding to what's happening in Gaza. We all know that there's a current transition. Israel has told everybody in Gaza to leave. And somebody's got to help these folks, which mm-hmm. then brings us to the Palestinian Children's Relief Fund, PCRF. This is specifically designed for delivering medical relief and humanitarian aid, again, to the conflict victims in Gaza, but most importantly, providing basic necessities to children. There's the United Nations Relief and Works Agency. And, you know, at some point, you got to house, you can't just tell 1.1 million people to leave. Mm-mm. This is the frickin' desert.
Yes. Yeah.
And you've laid siege to it, right? Yes. There are rules of siege, by the way. It goes back, frankly, to the Old Testament. A siege is nothing new. In times of war, we laid siege to castles in England during all of that nonsense. And, you know, a siege machine is something entirely different. Mm-hmm. You got to put at some point mm-hmm. to the victor go the spoils, right? Mm-hmm. At some point, you're going to house everybody if they don't get access into Egypt. Mm-hmm. There's the international.
Go ahead. What I love about what you're saying in terms of resources and keep them coming is one of the ways we foster resiliency in times of stress is to look for the helpers or be of service. You know, that old adage from Dr. Rogers, look for the helpers. That helps children, that helps you as an adult. Seeing that people care and want to help and find ways of being of service is one of the ways we can foster resiliency and manage our stress. So keep going.
There's also the international, going back through, making sure, the International Committee for the Red Cross.
Yes.
ICRC. They claim to be, I've got no reason to believe otherwise, that they are impartial, neutral, and independent. And they have a strict humanitarian mission to help victims of armed conflict and violence. They are working with the Palestinian Red Crescent Society, which is a medical relief organization that was running the hospital in Gaza City. But I don't know if it's been evacuated now or not. I'm guessing it has been, but, you know, at one point it wasn't. There are certainly Doctors Without Borders. They've been around for a long time.
Yeah.
Again, this is an independent charity. They provide medical care and supplies. This is going to be needed on both sides. I know what the Prime Minister in Israel has said about Hamas.
Right.
He's not said that about Palestine. And I want to be very clear that this is not Israel-Palestine war. This is an Israel-Hamas war.
Right.
And we're not going to fix that, folks. This podcast is not going to fix that. No. What it's going to do is be able to tell you there are outlets for you to, and I'm going to come to this in a minute because I love Michael Caine, to use the difficulty. And then finally, there's a global charity called Save the Children. Mm. And this is all designed to help keep children and families safe. And they, in particular, are approaching the context, construct, and need for mental health for the children of the attacks. You know, I was unaware, frankly, I was naive. I was listening to a commentator yesterday who said the average age of a Palestinian where this is all taking place is 22 years old.
I know.
The last election that put Hamas in power was 19 years ago.
Wow.
That means that these kids
were barely even born,
have never known anything different. I'm not justifying any of this. Mm-hmm. What I'm saying is they don't know anything. Mm-hmm. They're kids.
22.
They're kids with guns in some cases.
Yeah.
And so, you know, there's going to be a mental health impact of this war on everybody worldwide. This is going to create scars, which I would like to, I know we've gone a little long this morning, I'd love to at least end my part of this with the Michael Caine, the actor. I know you might go, what the hell has acting got to do with any of this? But Michael Caine told a story of one of his early days in acting, and he was on the stage and the two actors that were out before he was supposed to enter were improvising a fight scene between husband and wife. And the husband picked up a chair and threw it, and the chair jammed into the open doorway that Michael Caine was supposed to enter into. And now the entryway is blocked, and Michael Caine is supposed to make an entry. And it was that he said, I don't know what to do at this point. I can't get in. You blocked my door. Mm-hmm. And he was later instructed by the senior actor there to use the difficulty. And he simply said, if it's a comedy, enter the room by falling over the chair. If it's a drama, unwedge the chair or break it. But whatever it is, use the difficulty. And I think it's a brilliant approach to life that we all sit back and say, whatever our emotion is, whatever the emotion is, whatever the difficulty is, whatever you're feeling stuck about or stopped about, whatever's sticking in your craw, find out what the difficulty is and let's find a way together to use it. Because otherwise we become victims to this war as well.
I love it. That's a great way to end our segment, I think.
You know, I don't think we've done this topic justice. We couldn't do that in 45 minutes. But I think we've made little headway in saying, if you want to do something and you want to be of help, irrespective of opinions, sides, any of that, there are ways to not sit back and just watch.
Yeah. And foster your own resilience, keep up your own routines, offer patience to other people that are feeling distress. Keep up your connections, if not increase your connections. Like, this is about keeping your shit together in a difficult time. So how do you do that in the middle of war? Just what we've told you.
Yeah. And if you take the Neil Gaiman Good Omens approach, you find something that's more important than taking sides.
Yeah.
All right.
You're here.
Next week, we're going to talk about stress and the art of improvisation. We'll piggyback, at least I will, on the Michael Caine concept.
Oh, great.
Of using the difficulty. We'll be
or at
alive
least that's
again.
What we hope we'll do.
Depending, things may shift with the news.
Things may shift.
Again, the stress and the art of improvisation. Thank you all for listening to us. If you need help, feel free to reach out to us, but create a support system for yourself. And with that, may you all be at ease. Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
You've reached the end of another episode of Keeping Your Together in a Stressed World with Michelle Post and Scott Grossberg. If you like our show, we'd love for you to subscribe, rate our broadcast, and leave a review. The podcast is for general information only and not intended to be legal or mental health advice, nor the formation of a lawyer-client, nor therapist-patient relationship. Stay tuned for our next episode, and thank you for listening.